Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 331, published Christmas Day, 2012, the best of 2012. MacBreak Weekly is brought to you by Ford, featuring Bliss, the blind spot information system with cross-traffic alert and active park assist. Check out these available features on the 2013 Ford Fusion and 2013 Ford Taurus, and learn more at Ford.com/technology. Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special Christmas Day episode of MacBreak Weekly. Me, I'm your host, Leo Laporte, the Pat Boone of Macintosh Podcasts. Actually, today's episode is not what you think it is. It's going to be a best of MacBreak Weekly, the biggest stories, the most interesting stories, the biggest guffaws of 2012 with Andy, Alex, Renee Ritchie, and more. And I want to get right into it. But before we do, I'd also like to mention our friends at Ford, because they've been a big highlight for all of us here at TWiT all year long. We are just big fans. I love my Ford Mustang. I got that 2 years ago now when Ford first started advertising on the network. And I've loved driving it around. But I have to say, 2013 is going to bring a little change for me and my Ford, because I'm trading the Mustang in for the 2013 Ford Fusion. I'm so excited. And one of the reasons I want it is some of the new technologies they're building into both the 2013 Fusion, and it's also available on the 2013 Ford Taurus, like the blind spot information system. They call it Bliss, B-L-I-S. This is an amazing technology. They've put sensors into the rear panels of the vehicles, and it watches traffic behind you. And what happens is if traffic gets into your blind spot, you know, that area that you can't see with the mirrors, it can be a real problem, because it's one of the biggest causes for accidents, people pulling into a lane where there's a car there, they just didn't see it. This blind spot information system puts an audible and visual signal right on there on the rearview mirror saying, hey, there's somebody in your blind spot, don't merge. That's a lifesaver. Really incredible stuff. They also, those same sensors can do another thing that I'd love. I've actually had an accident in a parking lot. It's probably the worst accident I ever had. The car was total. I had just finished getting the car done. I think it was $1,500. I had a bunch of stuff work done on the car, and I was very slowly, cautiously, and intelligently driving it out when an employee of the car dealer whips out from a parking space right in front of me. I didn't have time to stop, totaled the car. I wasn't hurt, nor was the guy, but two cars destroyed, and all because he couldn't see. There was a big truck in between me and him. He couldn't see me coming down that narrow aisle. This would have avoided that. The blind spot information system gives you cross-traffic alerts. So as you're backing out of a parking spot, you can see, you can't see it, but the blind spot stuff can see around the corner and tell you if there's another vehicle coming, so you can stop, wait till it goes by, and then continue out. I wish he'd had that. Maybe not. I'd probably still be driving that old Geo, the Geo Prism. I like my Mustang a whole lot better, and I can't wait to get my Ford Fusion. They also have active park assist, and this I actually need. It's getting harder and harder for me with my limited mobility and poor eyesight to parallel park. Actually, I've never been a good parallel parker. You know that thing where you pull forward, then you pull back just far enough that you see the back of the car, and then you turn the wheel hard, and I always think, I'm going to hit the car. So I back off, and I turn it the other way, and then I don't get it in, and then it kind of, I park, but I'm 4 feet from the curb, or maybe, I just hate that. Or worse, you're searching for a parking space, you think you found one, and it's just too small. You can't get in it, so, no matter how good you are at parallel parking. So active park assist is very cool. I used this when we were in Detroit last year. Wow, was this cool. The active park assist, you press the button, you say, I'm looking for a parking space. And as you drive, the car is scanning the parking spaces. As soon as it sees one that's big enough, and it can be, just big enough, because it's very good at this, it says, all right, got it, pull forward. You pull forward, you take your hands off the wheel, you keep your foot on the accelerator and the brake, because you don't want to lose control of the vehicle. You're responsible for that. This was the lesson I didn't learn. And it's so wild, because a car pulls forward, does what you're supposed to do, you know, exactly the right distance, goes, bzzz, the wheel turns, and in 24 seconds, you're parallel parked. Better than you could ever do it yourself. It's kind of amazing. I want you to try this. Both Bliss with cross-traffic alert and active park assist are available now in the 2013 Ford Fusion and 2013 Ford Taurus. You better believe I'm getting in that new Fusion. I need it. And you can find out more at Ford.com/technology. I invite you to visit them today. All right, that's the only ad we're going to do today. I wanted to get it out of the way because we've just lined up a bunch of really great bits. Here, for your delectation, about an hour and a half of the best stuff from MacBreak Weekly 2012. Enjoy. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, the show that covers the latest Apple news, in this case, live from CES 2012, where there is no Apple news. Somebody made a very big mistake here. Good news, we got a great panel. I'm going to start all the way to the left with Leander Cani from cultofmac.com. Leander, great to see you. Why do you come to CES? There's no Apple news here.
Oh, I beg to differ. Apple's not here, but everybody else has got Apple products.
All right. We'll talk about it in just a second. Alex Lindsay has actually brought some products, in fact, some fun stuff to play with, including a Thunderbolt drive. I like drives. Alex Lindsay from PixelCore.com and PixelCore.tv. Sarah Lane is also here from iPad Today and Tech News Today. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Leo.
We're going to do iPad Today here
on Thursday. We're going to walk the iLounge.
28,000 square feet of iPod cases.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger than last year. So,
that's huge.
But there's more than just iPod cases, thank goodness.
I hope so. Also here from Cult of Mac, Irfan Elijah. It's good to see you, Irfan.
Nice to see you again.
I don't know if you've been on the show before, but have we met in person? I don't think.
We have met in person. We danced together at South by Southwest.
That was
I got
so
photos
much fun.
Of it.
Yeah.
Apparently, I didn't
really
do a good
drunk.
Job. Yeah, I think you were a little.
We danced together?
Yeah, we actually went like this. Dun, 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 dun.
Really?
Yeah, I have pictures of it. I'd love to send those to you.
Please, yeah. Just put
send
them
up to Sarah. She'll use them.
Public Flickr set, please.
Okay, I'll do
so
that.
We can all enjoy it.
So, Leander, why is this a good show for an Apple blog like Cult of Mac? Although, by the way, you're branching out with Cult of Mac.
Right, yeah.
It's more than Mac, baby.
Right, Android now, too.
Cult of Android.
Right.
Are you going to shave Android into the back of your head? Put a little robot?
Unfortunately, I don't have enough hair.
Too late, huh?
Too late now. Maybe I'll stick it on.
Do the Apple fanboys say, oh, you're apostate now?
Yeah, you know, we are running a risk of alienating, I hate to say, a small part of our audience, probably a big part of our audience, with doing this. But, you know, we've been getting these debates. Every time we talked about Android in a news story, there would be... We get a lot of Android fans coming in and debating this stuff on Cult of Mac, so it made total sense. It was just like the old days of the Windows versus Mac,
right.
PC wars.
It is exactly like that for anybody who lived through that.
Right. Yeah. It's Redux. It's exactly the same stuff again. I mean, it's a very
even down to market share and all of this stuff.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
Apple has huge market share right now, but at some point, I think Android's going to become the Windows.
Yeah, and they debate the same sort of stuff, you know, like the availability of software, which one's a better platform, which one does this better, which one does that better.
Yeah. Cool. Is that cultofandroid.com?
Cultofandroid.com.
Well done. No, I think that's great. And I know Mike Elgin is writing for you. In fact, he has the article, Why Apple Will Dominate CES. And that has been true every year the last since the iPhone came out, since 2007.
Yeah.
Last year, everybody was talking about iPad 2, the year before iPad, the year before the iPhone. I think this is the first year that it doesn't dominate. Now, it's early days. The show's been going on for 2.5 hours, so it might be too early to tell. But I see a lot of Microsoft, lot of Windows Phone, lot of Android.
True enough, exactly. I know. Microsoft has really come back this year. It's ironic.
This is their year.
Yeah,
their last year, but their year.
Yeah.
Going out with a bang.
Yeah. Very interesting.
I think that while Apple's not here and while you're not seeing a lot of the new Apple products, the one thing almost every person in almost every article that I've seen, every time they talk about anything being added to the TV, they say, but we're not sure how this will compare to the iTV. Apple isn't even here. They haven't even announced it. Every TV is going up against this mythical beast that, you know, this unicorn that, you know, but we've seen this unicorn so many times now. You know, we've seen it. You know, oh, they're never going to build a phone. Oh, they're never going to do an iPad. Oh, they're never, you know. And so you hear this, and then it just starts to keep on picking up speed. And it seems like a lot of when we're talking.
You're saying it feels like the drumbeat for the iPad and the iPhone.
Well, I'm just saying,
pre-release.
It feels like it's a CES pre-release where you have manufacturers that are very concerned about how whatever Apple's going to do is going to affect their business. And they're trying to figure out ways to add interactivity, ways to add Google TV, ways to add their own tools, their connected pieces.
Well, I mean, they should be doing that anyway, whether or not there's ever an ITV coming down the pipe, and there's probably not going to be one this year. It's just, I think it makes for a good article half the time.
Yeah, I just find it interesting how often you see it getting brought up.
Irfan, have you seen that LG 55-inch OLED 4-millimeter thick display?
I have not.
You
is
haven't?
It on the show floor? No,
yeah, it is
I've
on the show floor. It's
in
gorgeous.
A dark cave writing.
We
got to
get you writers. Well, I know Sarah saw it because it was at that event that I wasn't allowed into last night.
Not
that
he's bitter. Digital Experience.
I wasn't going to say the name, but yeah. So and I saw it as we walked in the show floor. We took a look at it actually on our live feed. The rumor is, and I'd love for the Cult of Mac guys, because I know you hear all the rumors, that since LG already makes Apple's panels, maybe this, which is not LG television but LG's panel division, maybe this is intended for an Apple TV.
Sounds plausible.
Does it?
For sure,
does it
yeah.
sound sensible? The only issue, of course, would be cost. Could Apple get away with charging $5,000 to $8,000 for an Apple TV?
Oh, gosh.
No, yeah, easily.
So. You think so? I do not.
Well,
that's
initially, but
especially since LCDs are now down below $1,000 at that size.
Yeah, I mean.
By the way, LG was not at Digital Experience last night.
I thought that the Samsung's was. The Samsung's was.
It wasn't the OLED.
They didn't have
LED,
the OLED?
Though.
Oh, well, I didn't miss anything.
No.
Well, these guys have huge overcapacity of panels, right? So they're dirt cheap, and they're dying to find a way to get rid of
That's
them,
right.
to shift them.
That's right.
The trouble is, I think, with when you think about Apple, is that they come out with a new iPhone every year. They have a new iPad every year. You know, they're in the hardware business, and they're in the hardware upgrade business. Every year they have something better. And how are they going to do that in the TV business? I think that's going to be difficult for them to figure out how exactly do they get people to upgrade the hardware if they're going to use their traditional hardware business model.
It is true that the Apple community is willing to pay higher prices for their gear.
We are. But look, that's true, but $10,000, $8,000, $5,000 for a TV.
I would be very surprised if we saw anything more than $2,000 or
$3,000. I totally agree. That,
it has to be a consumer product.
Yeah.
They won't necessarily charge a premium, because look at the iPad. The iPad is actually probably, was a really good deal when it came out. It was really shocking.
Isn't that interesting? But they were, and even though Steve Jobs said we are not competing against netbooks, they really were competing against the low-end, low-priced computer hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's true in TV right now. I mean, it's been such a bad year for HDTV manufacturers. They've been dumping their panels, as I said, for less than $1,000 for a 55-inch display.
And I think people, if Apple decided to go down that path, I think that what they are going to bring is more applications. They're not going to just bring video.
Yep.
I think what you have people that are tired of the viruses of their little PCs, and they're tired of, or they don't want to buy, they realize all I'm using it for is web surfing and email, and I just want to incorporate that with my TV and not think about it anymore. So I think the sell point, if Apple decided to go down that path, is that this isn't a TV. This is how you communicate. This is how you do all that other stuff along with your TV, in that experience.
I totally agree. One of the things that Steve Jobs had said before was the problem was getting people to buy this hardware, right? Because they already had TiVos, they were getting stuff from Dish, right? They didn't need to buy any more hardware. So if it comes built into the TV, it's like then all of a sudden people are like, oh, Apple has a TV. Oh, and it comes with all this extra functionality that I would have had to buy an Apple TV or some other device to get. So for me, it's like a natural choice. And if they make it similar, close to like a nice high-end TV, for me, it'd be a no-brainer.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the... And there's ways they could make components that are interchangeable. I know it's not exactly Apple, but something that could pop in, pop out, so they could change the frame.
Well, see, that's why I wonder why even bother with a panel. You got an Apple TV that can do all those things. Now, I have to say, Apple is felt here in a non-explicit way, because every TV manufacturer is showing TVs with built-in apps. At the
show. Which are still really, really hard to use.
These smart TVs.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was looking at the LG. Now, I only went by cursorily. But we showed everybody, if you watched our live stream at the beginning of the day, the LG TV with Google TV, was it LG? Yeah, with Google TV built in. It was an ice cream sandwich. They had a remote that I thought was decent, but then they also were showing you a phone and tablet interface. Android, not iPhone.
Well, that makes sense.
And I thought that it was actually pretty clear, pretty easy to use.
Right.
Certainly no worse than an Apple TV. Yeah. Big icons.
Alex, why do you think that Sony apps are so hard to use in a TV interface now?
Because going through it with the remote control, uh-huh. you know, do that little whatever that yeah. they want you to do. Now it does make sense exactly with the Google TV integration with an Android phone or whatever. If you have an Android phone, that totally makes sense. But I think that integrating our lifestyle with our little portable, whatever that is, our iPad, our Android, that makes it easier. That makes it like, because I don't lose this very often. My family loses the controller once a day. Like once a day, we can't figure out how to get to the Apple TV or back away
from
the Apple TV.
That's why you need gesture-based.
Well, and the thing is that I think those are good. But again, I think that the big thing here, and I think that TV manufacturers want to stay the dumb panel. But the issue is that I think that when I look at the way my kids and the way my parents use their computers, they don't need anything more than a fully operational iOS on their TV.
Yeah.
Right.
And I still think that there is a big argument. The Apple TV is fine, but I think that there is a big argument for a camera that's going to do Kinect kind of solutions as well as mm-hmm. the FaceTime. And I do think that FaceTime blows up for families. We do so much FaceTime now with my kids' grandparents. You know, like where they can, now that everybody's got an iPhone or an iPad or something, you know, the ability to let them, say, hey, the kids are doing this and taking little videos and letting them talk to them and everything else now that the kids are becoming more interactive, that's a very compelling thing. And it's more compelling when it's in the living room. You know, and I think I do think it's the total computing experience. It's getting rid of the computer. And I think this is what Apple's doing. They're getting rid of the computer for the average person across the board. I mean, even with their own line, they're slowly winding it down. But I think that they're slowly just cutting off. Instead of trying to beat Windows, they're just creating a whole other game.
They're just adding everything into
a completely new paradigm.
And they're very good at expanding their experiences, right? So they started with the iPod, and that brought a lot of people to the Mac. And then they had the iPhone, and then all of a sudden, oh, hey, there's an iPad. It's just like the iPhone. I can already use this if I buy one. And I think that's going to be a big selling point for the TV. You get a TV, and it's like all of a sudden, you already know how to use it because it interacts so well with the devices you already own.
That's the Steve Jobs phrase, you already know how to use it. And that was key, wasn't it? In fact, to the acceptance of the iPad was it was just a big iPhone.
And I think that's why it has sold so much better than competing Android devices.
We have some videos that you took on the show floor. I know you, Alex, are going to be doing this.
We actually shot these ones
with a real camera?
With a real camera. So Lynn
shot
these.
Son of a gun, how do you do that?
I know, it was crazy. So Lynn actually shot them, and I ran around, and I came ready, but then I ended up...
I've been using my iPhone and doing Audio Boo, which is audio only, uh-huh. and Social Cam for video, and just blogging right. with audio and video. It's been kind of got me back to my roots when I was an unaligned, unaffiliated journalist trying to get a story.
It's remarkably it's kind of refreshing fun. That it's not because you see, even with this, you've seen me.
It's
simple. I start rigging things up, though.
And, yeah, you can't make anything simple. What the hell is that?
Try this.
Oh, it's Anti-Shine.
This is Mattify.
Okay. Mattify. Put a little here.
Don, isn't it wonderful that we have that natural beauty that just shine its way through without
look at
makeup?
That. The shine is
isn't that
gone.
Crazy? Isn't that crazy?
Where can I buy more of that? I
know.
Need a tub of that.
So here's the thing. Is sometimes they were going to put it out of, they were going to get rid of it.
Cause, you know why? Selling? It's going to give me cancer. But no shine.
No, it's like when we were doing interviews in the Seychelles and we put this on someone and literally the DP who's worked all over the world in all these productions. I literally put it on the first subject, and he looked at me, and he goes, what did you just do?
That's magic, especially in the Seychelles. You need that.
Yeah.
So, Ken, you came out, as did Andy, from the East Coast to Macworld Expo. You're coming back next year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
I mean, do you want to talk about it?
It's kind of small, wasn't it?
No. I don't know. I was reading a few things when I came back, and the best thing that I found to sum it up is something that Chris Forsman over at Ars Technica wrote. As a tech journalist, Macworld has gradually become less interesting. As a user of Apple's products and a geek in general, however, the show has become perhaps more interesting.
Nicely put.
I was glad to see him print that because I just kept having this sort of feeling like this feels better to me somehow, but I'm not sure why. And that's really the way. There was a whole different energy, a whole different vibe. Yeah, I'll definitely be back. Small though it may have been.
And Gene, you said no. Now you know both you and Oliver go as exhibitors,
right?
So it's a value to use an exhibitor.
It's a fantastic value.
It must be decreasing value. I mean, Adobe's not there, Microsoft's there, not Apple's not there. There's a reason these big companies aren't going. HP was the biggest company there, and I wondered. Yeah. And I wondered why.
Well, I think that you could argue, and I certainly have, is that with no Adobe and no Apple, the people who come to Macworld are Mac users. Not, I mean, there's some people who are not Mac users yet, but Mac people want to see Mac software. And so last year we were mobbed at our booth because it was just us and BusyCal practically.
Yeah.
And so we said we're definitely coming back, and well, it was an very busy.
You say an interesting thing because I don't know how many booths there were there. It wasn't a whole lot. Well, let's put it this way. It seemed much smaller than the iLounge at CES.
I've never been.
Okay. Do we have a number on it, though? Because when I first walked in, my feeling was that there were actually more vendors. And I guess this might have been a nice thing to ask Paul while we were out there.
I should ask.
My feeling was that there were more vendors, but in a smaller space. Like the Mac software side where Gene was. Nuance was over there. Nuance last year had a bigger space. And this year they didn't. And so I don't know if that means that Nuance decided... I don't know if that means that Nuance decided to reduce its footprint or if the whole Mac side was smaller. I don't really know. But to me, for a while, it felt like there were many more people there, just crammed in tighter.
I thought it was just a more target-rich environment than it was last year. I got to admit that I was a little bit disappointed with last year's show because it really didn't take me long at all to feel as though not only had I walked through every aisle of the show last year, but also that I have seen everything I would want to see. I have had in-depth conversations with as many exhibitors as have in products I'm really interested in. This year, I had my schedule was really compressed. And I, out of 2 hours, I still was about 25% sure. There was still like one aisle and a half that I haven't covered yet. But it had more interesting things in it, more things you might recognize from like a Kickstarter campaign 6 or 7 months ago. In fact, I was talking to a friend of mine she's been a friend of mine for about 10, 15 years. She is like very, very active in independent Mac and iOS developers as a PR rep. And she was saying that she felt as though she wished that she had gotten more of her clients here because she felt as though it was a very, very good value. Every single member of the Mac and iOS press that you would want to have covering your product or covering your service was here. And as you say, there was no Adobe, there was no Apple, there was no huge like a gargantuan vendor to exhibitor to distract people's attention from it. So I got a lot more value out of it. I certainly got at least 4 or 5 columns worth of information out of it. So I was pretty happy. My opinion was actually a little bit topsy-turvy from Ken's in that I thought it was certainly a good show for me. I thought it was an entertaining show, a huge step forward in terms of the content, because I thought it was a more successful marriage of the old-fashioned tutorials on how to get things done with your devices, as well as just entertaining exhibitions like the interviews with the South Park creators, stuff with Jonathan Frakes, that sort of stuff. But when I was introduced to people who had flown like halfway across the world to be here, I was glad that they were there. I'm not sure that if they had asked me before they traveled, should I spend $2,000 to fly out to Macworld, iWorld, I would have to say, how much money do you have? Because if this is, it was an entertaining show. I'm not sure if I would, I personally, in my budget as a freelance journalist and a print medium that's slowly dying, that I would spend $2,000 to attend this show. But it was very, very good. I'm really excited to see what happens next year because it's definitely on the correct trajectory. And I thought that this year's show was a good value for a lot of people.
It is a transitional year, obviously, from... And maybe that's partly what, for me, I'm still living in the past. 27 years Macworld's been going on. Now, I do have the press release, which IDG just released. Thank you, IDG, for sending this out here. 25,000 people, they said, 40% of whom were first-time attenders, 300 exhibitors and sponsors, 100 new products, 75 tech talks, and, of course, a much-reduced price for the iFan Pass, only $80 if you wanted to go to that track. But it's a transitional... I mean, it really is part of a transition from the way it used to be. I mean, it used to be you'd go to Moscone Center on Macworld Expo Day, and the palpable excitement, there was the traffic jams, the number of people. And, of course, that's because Steve Jobs was speaking, Apple was there. It was a very different event now. Oliver, will Boinks continue to go?
Certainly. I think it was very worthwhile for us to come over. Let's do the litmus test. Andy, did you stop by our booth?
Unfortunately, I think you were we're looking back to the left.
I missed that too.
I saw Albert.
You missed us too.
Well, you making it up? No,
yeah. I saw you. I did go by you, but I completely missed.
Oh, yeah.
Your booth, and I apologize. Where was your booth?
It was actually in the Mobile Apps showcase.
It just shows you that it is big. It is big enough.
It's big. Yeah, it's big enough to miss something. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. And then I'll say something.
So it was worthwhile for us. And the strategy clearly was that we wanted to have like a little pod there on the Mac Mobile App Showcase as sort of a meeting point.
You had a pod, not a
box. Yeah. And the meeting point, on the one hand for the users, and on the other hand, of course, for people like yourself, the press, and other important multipliers. And I think it worked out quite well, notwithstanding that we won two awards, actually.
Yeah, that's not so bad. What was the other one?
Mac Observer. Editor's Choice.
Very nice.
And Smile won that as well. And the Smile booth was on the same side of, we were neighbors on the Mobile App Showcase. And so we decided to petition for next year to call this the award zone. Because between the two of us, we had like five awards.
And I have to say, it's not
she's ahead one.
It's not why you and Jean are here. It's just because you're friends and we love you. But hey, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
We got the award winners here, ladies and gentlemen.
It's like the
Meryl Streep and Dustin Hoffman of Mac.
Yes. Multi award winners.
Do I look like Dustin Hoffman?
Oh, yeah. Later.
Yeah, Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. That's not nice.
The thing that kind of really bummed me out was the Mac OS X alley. You make Mac software. You both make Mac software. Is Apple kind of... Is this some sort of reflection of the fact that Apple's kind of become not a computer company but a consumer electronics company? Is OS X dead? Is software for OS X dead? Such an alley?
Well, it's interesting because we did this last year in 2011, and we were in what was called like the Indie Pavilion or whatever. And there were actually fewer booths, but the way that it was set up, it was easier to see them. It didn't have quite this like, the back alley of Macworld.
I was stunned. They even had signs. It almost looked like,
you must be 21.
Abandon all desktops, ye who enter here, whatever. It was like, oh my God, it's the OS X zone.
Yeah, in fact, we decided at the last minute to take a booth in mobile apps as well because we were showing an iPad app and we weren't quite sure what the traffic was going to be.
Back there. Yeah.
Often that area is very, even though it's out of the way, it's very popular because everybody, like you say, you want to go to Tiny Town. That's where like the new
exciting
things. But the way it was set up this year, I would say bad feng shui.
Right.
And it was still busy.
Was.
I think that's what it
maybe
was. I don't think
that's all it is. It was just where it was.
There were definitely more Mac developers like us there this year than last.
All right.
Don't lose the rubber stopper. They're like,
Alex, you want some cold?
Where is the rubber stopper?
Oh, I would love some.
Is that it, you mean?
I would love it.
Oh, this, you mean?
Andy, can you hear us?
The rubber stopper goes in the bottom of the plastic.
Oh, I see it right there. That's very important, huh? It's in with the filters.
It's lost just like that old light.
Yeah, the whole thing is shot.
This looks, anything that looks like a flask is, looks like it's going to work for me.
Mike Ilgen, that might be
Tutty,
you.
How's Tutty formed?
That would be me. Hang on a second.
So this goes in here?
No, it goes in the bottom of that big plastic thing.
Oh, yeah, very important. Goes in here. Okay, I got it. So then this goes in here.
There you go.
And then you put coffee and water in here, and you put it in the fridge? And you let it sit for 12 hours.
You need a product shot?
There. You really should seal this, though, because it's oxidizing, isn't it?
You wet the filter. You put in a cup of coffee.
Where's the filter go?
It goes to the bottom there.
In the bottom here?
Put in a cup of water. Put in 6 ounces of coffee. Put in 3 cups of water. Put in 6 ounces of coffee. Put in more.
Oh, you layer it.
Too much. Wow.
But you only do it. That makes a ton of coffee.
Well, better because it's a lot of work.
It's not that much work.
Concentrated coffee.
Makes enough coffee for a week. What's this for?
Refrigerated.
Oh, it's your handle.
I lost mine.
So this is a very simple system. It's basically sun tea.
$3 worth of parts, yeah, for $39.95.
That's all right. That's all right. It's the Toddy coffee system. And then here's...
Hey, where's like coffee today?
That's we're going to do a show. We
See?
Really have to do a
there
show.
You go.
Coffee, chocolate, and tea. God. Okay. And Kevin can do the tea portion.
Hey, Leo, how about adding cigars and beer
call
and wine?
Java development.
Cigars, beers, and wine.
Call it This Week in Vice.
This Week in Vices.
No, I'm not happy that Heinz Ward is retired.
Did you get a new mic, Mike Elgin?
Mike got a mic.
Mike got a mic.
Mike?
Tap the mic, though.
Oh, he's got a mic that looks familiar.
Yeah, he's on it.
Yeah, he's on it. Yeah, I think you were just getting a lot of room tone.
Oh, the filter's reusable. Yes. So you...
After a while, though, you
can... Oh, there's only two filters in that bag. It looked like there was a dozen, but it was just two.
And you don't stir the grinds because the dust gets down in the filter.
Oh, you don't want to stir the grinds. You want to let it settle. Insert the stopper to the outside bottom of the brewing container, then dampen the filter and insert it into the inside bottom of the brewing container, and then add 1 cup of water, 6 ounces of ground coffee, 3 more cups of water, in a circular motion, not stirring, but a circular motion. Then add the remaining 6 ounces of ground coffee. So it's a total of 12 ounces of ground coffee. I have one of these KitchenAid grinders. What kind of grind do you like?
I went to, they said French press grind. A coarse grind.
A coarse? A coarse grind. Okay. Steep your coffee grounds for 12 hours to create a smooth, rich flavor. Oh, I forgot. Finally, wait 5 minutes and slowly add the last 3 cups of water. Do not stir. Stirring the bed of grounds can result in a clogged filter. Lightly press down on the topmost grounds of the back of a spoon to ensure all grounds get wet.
Hey, Mike, do me a favor and tilt your camera.
Steep your coffee grounds for 12 hours.
You can see.
Filter. Remove the stopper and let your coffee concentrate.
There we go.
Flow into the plastic canner.
Other way.
And then you put the decanter in your fridge.
Awesome.
They recommend 1 part of coffee concentrate to 3 parts of water, milk, or soy mix to taste, making your coffee as strong or as weak as you prefer. I now have more ways to make coffee in my apartment than I have to make food.
Okay.
I have an espresso machine. I have the Bodum. I really like the Bodum's not a French press. It's a Mr. Mocha. I like the Mr. Mocha. It makes the bitterest, most acidic, oily, thickest burnt brew ever, and it's delicious. So there you go. This may be too smooth for me.
We're waiting on the cream.
We don't have cream?
It will be here in a minute.
Oh, thank you. How could we not have cream?
Cream?
I wasn't here Sunday.
Oh, okay.
John is our creamer.
All right. did you make the cream?
Ooh, Gary, this is what we need. This is much more fancy.
Sheesh.
The Yama Cold Brew Drip Tower.
Burke wants one of those.
Oh, look at that. Blue Bottle has this? This looks so cool. I might as well, since I already have a kitchen devoted to coffee preparation, I might as well. I eat out and I make coffee. The only thing I do in my kitchen is make coffee. See, that's what I'm going to get.
You know, okay, so here, you know what's funny is that I was actually, I saw that online and I was actually thinking about getting one myself. It was a different one though.
I don't think exactly it would do like it any better.
It didn't look exactly like this one. But there's a couple different versions of that. But the fact that it looks like it came out of a lab.
That's what I like.
Oh no, it's Yama. Yeah,
that's yeah, the one. It's the same one.
I was looking at.
Through a unique 8-hour process, using pure ice water, ice drip coffee produces a unique flavor not found in regular brewed coffee. Although it looks like complicated lab equipment, the Yama Cold Brewer is very easy to use. I don't know what accent that is. It's going all over the place.
And that pick of the week last week really did a number on you. I thought it would just make you vibrate for a week, but now you've actually found religion.
Yeah. Funranium. It turned me.
The Bible did to Kirk Cameron, Funranium did to you for coffee.
I have the Funranium. I brought it home, the black blood of the earth. It's okay. It's good. I'm not sure I would go crazy about it. And I think it's expensive compared to doing it yourself. See, this is the whole process there. You wet the filter.
Plus this way you get to have gadgets.
Right.
Yeah, I think a couple months ago I was looking at this and I was just trying to decide where I'd put it in my kitchen. That was the whole thing. It was like,
look at this part. Brass fittings, kids. One drip a second. But imagine people coming over and saying, what are you making?
coffee. I'm making cold drip coffee.
Making coffee.
Is this like that series at AMC? Is it like, have you been diagnosed with something and I decided I'm just going to make $1 million in a shack?
Yes.
Look at this. It comes in a flask, an Erlenmeyer flask with a glass stopper. It's worth $210. Well,
is there audio with that?
And it's perfect right next to your sous vide cooker.
What's a... Oh, yeah, you're a sous vide guy.
Yeah.
See, that's a little too weird for me. I can't. I have to heat my food.
I heat the food.
Yeah, very little.
No.
You put it in the bag. First of all, the plastic worries me.
Well, you can...
Cooking in plastic is a bad idea.
You're not cooking it very much. That's the whole point. You cook it just to what it needs to. I had...
So what's the sous vide temperature? Like 112?
No, it just depends. You still cook meat to 132 degrees.
Okay.
So, and then I cooked... I had a soft-boiled egg this morning. It was... I cooked it to 147 degrees for an hour.
Is that in the oven?
No, it's a cooker. It's
a special cooker that has exactly the right...
But I don't put that in the plastic. I literally just I take my egg and I just put it in the water and then back to whatever I'm doing.
Because it's hard-boiled. Yeah.
And it's incredible.
So it's a special container that heats the water exactly right.
Yeah, so you get it to exactly 132 degrees or exactly 147 or whatever, and you just get this. So the best thing is you can leave like a tri-tip in there for like 2 days. and then it just makes it really...
And how much
really,
is a sous vide cooker?
It's like $400.
Jeez Louise.
But I'll tell you, a sous vide cooker with a big green egg is like...
What kind of sous vide did you get?
I got the Supreme. What do you think I was going to get?
This is what happens.
It's $100 difference.
When crazy geeks... All right, so is it on Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. Yeah.
Now, Mike is also has a food...
And here's the best part. So it sounds like you're getting crazy, but... So Safeway actually has...
sous vide is what it is.
Sous vide. So that top one is what I...
That's the one you have.
And
jeez.
But here's the best part is that Safeway has pre-packed, you know, that's already been vacuum packed with all the marinating and everything else. And if you just throw it in there, you just like literally...
So they actually have pre-packed sous vide.
It's not for sous vide. It just happens to be pre-packed.
Oh,
it just turns out that you take
it
and you throw
sealed.
It in there.
Yeah.
And
you never have to...
And it's...
I just worry about
incredible.
Cooking in plastic. I really do. Aren't there... Isn't there bovine growth hormone or something? I don't know what it is.
I don't know. It's really good.
And then what is this? The Iwatani torch burner.
Yeah, because what happens is when you get your meat up...
Oh, now you have to brown it.
You brown it. Now I oftentimes use a...
This meat is gray. Oh, well, you need the special torch. We didn't mention that.
Well, I'm telling you. You're going to have to come over sometime. It's worth it.
All right. Now, can you believe this? This is we all have eating disorders. Essentially, we have eating disorders. So this other side of ADD is eating disorders of some...
It's an OCD thing. Do the fair play provisions of like the FCC mandate give me the ability to talk for Coca-Cola, talk about Coke as long as you guys are talking about coffee?
Yeah, you can talk about sugar.
when we do the This Week in Vice, I just want to see
that.
That is a good cup of coffee.
That's good, Gary.
That is excellent.
That's a good cup of coffee.
Smooth.
Time now for our picks of the week. Let's start with Rich Siegel of Barebone Software.
I owe my presence on the show today to one thing.
What's
and
that?
It is my pick of the week. It is this. It is the black blood of the earth.
Do you drink it or pour it on your body?
I would eat through the skin.
Why choose? the black blood of the earth is a cold brewed extract of coffee. I'll just read off the bottle.
This is because you live in Rhode Island and you grew up on that Fox's You Bet or whatever that was, the syrup. What is the coffee syrup you get in Rhode Island only?
There are two brands, and it's actually the subject of gang wars here.
Exactly.
Eclipse.
Yes.
An autocrat.
I'm an autocrat kind of guy.
Oh, we can't be friends anymore.
You're an Eclipse guy? What is wrong with you, dude?
Oh, everything. Where do I begin?
So these things are the most bizarre, and you can only get them in Rhode Island. So it's coffee concentrate, highly sweetened. It's the condensed milk of coffee.
Oh, yeah. Coffee syrup is, yes.
And you pour it into a glass of milk, and it makes coffee milk, which is very popular in Rhode Island. They love their coffee milk.
In fact, in elementary school, they don't have chocolate milk. They have coffee milk.
Coffee milk.
which is great. If you've ever seen kids hopped up on coffee and sugar together. Yeah. So is this what you, if you grew up on coffee milk, is this where you end up at the Funranium Labs and store?
No, this has nothing to do with coffee syrup.
Oh, okay.
The Black Bloody Earth is a cold brewed coffee extract. I'll just read the label because he says it pretty well. It's a cold extraction concentrate of single geographic coffee varietals from around the world in the interest of not damaging or masking the delicate flavors with cream and sugar. Now, the interesting thing about this stuff is that because he cold extracts it, it leaves behind all the acids that make coffee bitter and make you want to sweeten it.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that in terms as a means of caffeine ingestion, it's volumetrically extremely efficient.
It burns your esophagus as it goes down.
No, because there's no acids in it. He left the acids out.
He left them out.
So all you get are the things that make coffee great in a pretty highly concentrated form. This bottle was actually full this morning.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm kidding.
How many milligrams of caffeine is that?
Well, this is a fifth. This is a 750 milliliter bottle.
Taking a fifth of coffee.
But it's a bad idea, really pretty bad idea to drink more than 4 ounces of this stuff in a day.
Well, that's $40 worth for one thing.
So, yeah, a single bottle of this lasts me, a month or two, I think.
Okay. So do you dilute it or you drink it straight?
It depends on how much of a hurry I'm in. Sometimes I will use it to fortify my morning coffee. I'll brew a couple of shots of espresso and add a shot of this and, you know, a little milk. Because
this stuff is insane.
Oh, it's great.
He says, by my calculations, you have the equivalent of a month and a half worth of Starbucks ventis.
Yeah, that's
in that bottle. Right. So how do you cold extract it? I'm curious. That's intriguing.
If you look on his website, he's got pictures. He's got a very intricate and to some people, beautiful apparatus. He grinds the coffee. He adds water. He brews it down. And I think I forget what he said his production is, something like 9 liters a week or something like that of different varieties.
Wow.
And he bottles it and ships it.
This is the hardest core thing I have ever seen.
It's serious. It's very serious. There is a consumer cold brewing thing called a toddy. I can look that up.
So he has a comparison between regular coffee and a BBOTE or black blood of the earth.
Uh-huh.
Cold water steeping followed by vacuum extraction, leaving the grounds almost as dry at the end as when they started. Therefore, less acid, less staining, no brown teeth. The oil has been removed, from the coffee bean, but not the acid. And we're talking. He doesn't say how many milligrams of caffeine, but it's not an insignificant amount.
It's great stuff, and if you enjoy coffee and or are a serious caffeine addict.
He says drink responsibly. No more than 100 milliliters, 3.5 ounces a day.
Yep.
So you really could go into fibrillation with this.
Yes, or you might run into toxicity issues. It's if you drank too much of it, it's possible to overindulge in anything, right? But it's great stuff. It's very flavorful. If you enjoy the flavor of coffee.
I do. But I put cream and sugar in my coffee. I know that's anathema. But again, I've been spoiled by an autocrat for many years.
Well, if you try this with a little milk, you know.
That's okay?
Yeah.
That's allowed?
Yeah.
I'm ordering some right now.
Yeah. Enjoy it. Try it.
We're serving this at Twit from now on. Forget the wine and beer and whiskey. It's the black blood of the earth from now on.
That's right. This is great stuff, and I highly endorse this product.
Now, right now, he's doing a Peruvian, or you could get a Rwandan. So these are all single Guatemala. Which do you like?
Well, I've had. a sampling of things so far. I'm on a bottle of the Rwandan right now.
Yeah,
and it's very nice.
The Aba Kundakawa.
Yeah, you could try the sampler.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get they have a $50 limited run sampler. These look like vials of blood. Oh my goodness.
Well, they are in a very real sense.
Holy cow. All right, I'm ordering this. We'll do it. We'll do it on the show. We'll do it awesome. As soon as it comes.
Have a tasting.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got coffee fiends in the house.
Oh, we do. We live on coffee, right?
Right. I mean, remember, it's unsweetened, it's unflavored, it's just what comes out of it. So, right.
They have, you know, this comes with Death Wish, which is a soul blackening dark roast.
Yeah.
Guatemalan Mundo Nuevo, medium roast, and Colombian Paez, medium roast, and then the Rwandan. Plus two vials of mystery will be chosen by my capricious whim.
Yep.
Rich, yep. I think you're great, but I understand why the universe led you to our show today.
Yes. Yes, the universe has led us to the black blood of the earth. Is there anything else you recommend? Is there a special consumption device? Perhaps a syringe?
I do not recommend injecting this. You should consume it orally.
God.
50 milliliters per aura per day.
And Burke in our chat room is wondering, do you need to wear gloves when you're touching this brew?
If you spill the Death Wish, you may wish you had, but the rest of it is fine.
Do not spill on its way to your gullet.
That's right.
Andy and Iko, your pick of the week. I don't know if you could top that one.
I'm hoping that, like, if you do get this in the office for the entire day, I want you to have a little indicator on AllTwit broadcast indicating how much of this Leo has had.
That's a great idea.
This puts 5-hour energy drink in the back seat. I mean, this is for serious people.
Have you ever tried pocket coffee?
Yes, I know about pocket coffee.
So this is like a shot of espresso wrapped in chocolate, so you can actually...
Yeah, I love it.
Okay.
Yeah, love it. Sometimes I just eat the beans whole because I find I just want to... But this sounds like they've done all the work for you. It's like pre-chewed coffee.
It sounds like they need to just sell this from an offshore island.
Sure they are. This is a Jonathan Colton mad scientist guy. I could tell.
And then 8 years from now, everyone turns into like Animal Man. It was just all a diabolical...
You know, for $250, you can buy a 350 milliliter rugged stein of science. I don't know. Do you have one of these, Rich?
No, I don't have any of the steins. They look appealing, but I haven't found an excuse to get one yet.
It's fairly expensive.
They have a 4,900 milliliter one.
What would you put in that?
Everything.
I see.
Here's my cup.
I see. But you wouldn't want to fill it up with this stuff.
Well, no, the Stein...
keeps things cold.
The Stein keeps things cold or hot. I mean, you could brew hot coffee into it. But I think the Stein was originally conceived for cold drinks such as beers and soda.
They also have a brass... Oh, that's very steampunk. I think I do need to order that.
Yeah, he's got some lovely gear there.
Yeah. But not required.
No. No, the two are completely separate. The black blood of the earth and the steins of science are
not related. Here's not a thousand. This is, I'm going to send this to Steve Gibson for his five shot venti lattes. This is a 1,000 milliliter shiny stein of science.
Here we go. You want the 4,300 milliliter full metal jacket stein of science.
You think so? That's the one I really want.
Yeah, that's like a week's worth of beer.
1,000 is a little more than one really should. But it will stay cold all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to talk about? I don't want to talk about, but I'll mention it. Google circumventing the iOS Safari's third party cookie protection.
This is what I think.
What a bunch of jerks! Let me tell
you. I'm serious. The conversation starts with "What a bunch of jerks!" Yeah. We don't know how high up this decision came, but the fact that this actually went into a live code says,
Oh, man. I disagree.
That's humiliatingly bad.
I disagree. But anyway, go ahead.
This is the way I kind of look at Facebook and at Google. It's like they're in a prison cell. And during the day, they've got this poster of Farrah Fawcett on the wall. And then at night, they peel that back. And with a spoon, they're digging away at the wall that is our privacy. And then every so often, a senator comes by with the billy club and kind of goes da-da-da-da-da-da across the bars, and at which point they're back in the bunk and the poster's back in place. The senator leaves, and then they're back again with the spoon.
But really, did they interfere with your privacy? All they did was put code in there that allowed them to put a plus one button, which wouldn't mean anything unless you were logged into Google at the time.
Yeah, but I think
you're logged into Google.
But so much of it is about the spirit of this, which they ignore. Yeah. And what they do is they look at their contract or they look at whatever the specs are. They say, well, technically, we didn't do anything wrong because we're not collecting your personal data. We're just doing this. But if you look at the spirit of it, which is basically, would you please get out of my business? And I think both Facebook and Google do whatever they can to get in your business.
To me, it's even simpler than that. It is, I really just want to shake them by the throat and say, this is not a freaking game. If there is a user setting that says, I desire this level of privacy, and you do something to specifically circumvent that setting, you are a bunch of jerks. Just like if I can specifically tell any advertiser, I do not respond to pop-up advertising on websites. I hate it. I never use it. I just don't like it at all. I have voted and indicated that preference by installing software that defeats these things. If you then put in code that tries to get around that, saying, oh, well, I bet that he would respond to my ad, that's because he hasn't been targeted effectively. Or, as I really believe is the case with some of these decisions, that I really believe there's a sense of arrogance in which they're saying, screw him. That's not his decision. If we can get this cookie installed, we will install this cookie. How dare he do something to stop us from our God-given moral right to collect as much information as we can? This will fix his wagon. Screw Andy Anatko. Screw Chris Breen. Screw all those users. We are entitled to every piece of information we can get.
I would buy that.
That's what gets me really, really upset.
I would buy that if Apple had, I mean, this was a default setting to block third-party cookies. Apple says sites allow cookies only from sites you have visited. That is the default setting. Apple does say something about it on the desktop, but does not say anything about it on iOS. So it really wasn't, no iPhone user necessarily has chosen that. Apple's chosen that for them.
Well, by the same token, they've also not chosen to upload to Google every photo that I have on my hard drive.
Yeah, yeah,
they've
no,
also
I understand.
Not chosen. Okay, I mean,
but this I think, is the but setting. I think it's not so clear because
in
I think
in a sense, in a sense, well, I really do think it's clear. Anytime you make that conscious decision as a developer that says, "Here is a protection against this thing that I'm trying to do. I'm going to exploit a bug or a weakness to get around that protection." You suddenly you're not a criminal, but now you've taken one step more into the direction towards being a criminal.
What and about the contention? Here's my contention. I believe Apple set that not to protect my privacy. I believe Apple set that to protect iAds. What they would like to do is say, hey, nobody can have any information about our customers except us. And so as a result, they are very careful to, quote, protect my privacy, except when it comes to iAds. Apple's not interested in privacy. They're interested in market protection. And Google didn't even do this in such a way to impose on my privacy, merely to put a plus one button on ads on sites that somebody who has signed into Google has already said, I want a plus one button, in effect. So what Google's doing is saying to Apple, hey, no, in fact, our customers are telling us they want to be signed into Google. They want a plus one button, and you're blocking it as market protection, not as privacy. How about that argument?
Okay, well, turn your iPhone over. What logo is there? It's not a Google logo. It's an Apple logo.
Well, that's why I don't use an iPhone, Andy, but I don't think that Apple is on the side of the angels here. I think that's a mistake to assume.
Okay, well, I'm not going to speculate as to the reasons why that the default settings for the Safari browser are the way they are. It's possible that what you say is correct, that this is a long-range strategic sort of thing where they don't want competition from the iAds. It's possible, though, that they are truly saying, what would the user want in this situation? Would they want a stronger browser that protects their privacy, or would they want a weaker browser that protects our privacy? We can't speculate.
Or would they want a browser that breaks Google? See, I don't think Apple. I think Apple wants to break Google.
It breaks all the boats in the harbor. they all sink at the same rate. It really is a philosophical thing. It's like if there is a locked door, I really think you can get through that lock because, oh, geez, it's actually like a 4-pin lock. I got a paperclip with me. I can easily get past that. But there is a principle that says that this person locked this door for a reason. It's not the door. He didn't do it to bar me from getting access to things I have a right to. It's not as though here's a public bathroom that everyone's supposed to use and he locked it so that he could have it for himself. This is a private door with a private lock. As soon as you try to open that lock without anybody's permission or without anybody's knowledge, you have taken a step away from the angels and towards the pointy pitchfork sort of guy.
And I agree. That's cannot know Apple's intention here, so I'm not going to impute Apple's intention. But they did not – the choice to lock the door was in fact not the user's choice. It was Apple's choice, and Apple did not publicize it.
Let me put it this way.
If I go to a site where I expect a plus one button because I'm logged on to Google and I don't get it, I may not know why I'm not getting the plus one button. I may not know enough to go in there and change that setting. Maybe I want that button.
I want to put it this way. Let's say that a developer releases an app that decides, well, the default setting for Gatekeeper on Mountain Lion is to not allow apps that have not been signed. I'm not sure the user really wants that, so I'm going to exploit this loophole to allow this piece of code to install and execute, even though it hasn't been signed by everybody. Are you still?
That's end-arounding. I agree. No, I agree. Okay. So and I think you can make a case that Google is malicious here. I'm not sure it's as. I bring up this alternative point of view to point out that it's not 100% clear.
I think that if Google's, now this is my prejudices. If I believe that if this nameless company who did this workaround, this end run against Safari security features, if they were really on the side of the angels, what they would do is be able to sense, why can't I set this cookie? Oh, let's do an ID check. Oh, it's a Safari browser. We'll just throw up a little notice that says, oh, by the way, we would like to enable this, but we can't because your security settings are
set. That might be the right thing to do. I agree.
I believe that someone whose instincts are to do no harm would choose that option. Not
there must be a way we can get around this somehow. That would be a good way to do that, actually. And I wish Google had done that.
Does Facebook go around it with a like button also?
Yeah, they're also semi tracking people that haven't whether you signed it or not.
It would break the like button.
Yeah.
So anytime in order for this whole issue of third party cookies. By the way, we talk about third party cookies a lot on Security Now. I have the same debate with Steve, which is it doesn't bother me. Third party cookies in general and third party cookies in particular don't bother me. I like it that there's a setting so that if it bothers somebody, they can turn it off. It is somewhat how the web works, however. It is how ads are served. It is how the web pays for itself. Facebook, for example, is a free service that monetizes with things like the like button. Now, I acknowledge that I think when you explain what the like button does to people, they go, what the hell? You mean every site I go to with a like button, Facebook knows I was there, whether I'm logged in or not? That upsets people. But in fact, if you get the full story, which is, look, you're getting a free service. They're monetizing. Google's monetizing by advertising. Their goal is not to say, I want to tell somebody what Leo Laporte's up to, but in fact to get ads served to you that are of more interest to you than just generic ads. I think that my point is that is a larger argument. I agree with you, Andy. It would be great, and I hope that we're moving to a future where you are notified about all this stuff. But then we've got the problem where you have notification fatigue,
right?
Which we once have seen before on Windows with UAC on Vista, where people just start, yeah. So
I guess I do agree with you that there does need to be a way so that people who run commercial sites can get paid for the content that they create that actually does cost money. It's not just some dude in his apartment sometimes. It really is journalism that costs money. I mean, I have to fly to these places to cover these events. I guess the definitive change would be I'm thinking about Ghostery, for instance, which is that really great cookie blocker. Mm-hmm. That's a plugin. It's one thing to not ask before you can deposit cookies. It's another thing to simply say, oh, there's Ghostery involved. Ghostery has been installed. That's why I can't install it. But that's okay. I know a way around Ghostery. I think that if someone has installed Ghostery,
you're right.
They've really made their
preferences clear. That's a clear signal.
Right.
I don't think there's such a clear signal from iOS because it was default and Apple did not make a big deal saying, hey, by the way, we are disabling third-party cookies on your behalf. If they had said that, then there'd be no argument. And if Google had said, hey, by the way, we can't put a plus button on here because Apple has disabled third-party cookies. Would you like to re-enable this? Then there would be no argument. The problem is neither side is really explaining their point of view here. And for good reason, because nobody wants to hear it. It's like more detail than most people want, right?
Right. And what they do is they give you a very broad setting, which is private browsing. So right. You can flip that on, and then you're pretty well set. But, then that disables everything. So when you return to your favorite website, you go, I have to log in again because there's no cookie there.
Steve keeps telling me to put no script or script no on my various browsers. I turn it on for one day, and I go, this is a pain in the ass, and I turn it right off. You know, the truth is JavaScript is a problem. And if Apple really wants to protect privacy, what they should do is turn off JavaScript just as they turned off Flash in Safari. Then we'd all be safe, but no sites would work.
That's it.
I like Jean-Louis Gasset. He has a turn, good with a turn of the phrase. The treatment for the blood disease called polycythemia vera, too many red cells, goes back to the Dark Ages. Okay, now if you're eating breakfast, you might want to just cover your ears. Lance a vein and relieve the patient of a pint of blood. Phlebotomy treats the symptom, but not the condition. There's no known cure. The bloodletting must be repeated indefinitely. This is what comes to mind when I see how Apple intends to treat its polycythemia vera, too many greenbacks. Apple's going to bleed off $45 billion in excess cash through a combination of dividend payments and stock repurchase. But why get rid of the excess cash, he says? How dangerous is it, and what exactly is excess? I encourage you, it's a long and elaborate post, but he talks about the debate on Wall Street about what to do. Is it better to keep this cash? Is it better to get rid of this cash? Is Apple they say we'll replace the cash anyway, just in normal operations. It isn't going to even cost us anything. It just keeps us from going over $100
billion. Wall Street's fear is that Apple's going to go nuts and buy every company in the universe and thereby get distracted and waste money and time and energy and all that stuff.
Right.
And that's a really good thing to be afraid of because Wall Street insider types are among the only pundit commentators out there who are a little bit more disciplined and realistic about what acquisitions can give you. I just wrote a Cult of Mac post on this on Saturday, which is essentially saying what he's saying, and that is that, Apple should buy nothing. I rounded up all of these articles that said Apple should buy Twitter, Apple should buy Yahoo, Apple should buy
Canada
Postal Service. Yeah, I mean, it was just nuts. Everybody because everybody wants to be Dr. Evil sitting in a lair.
Right.
And like spending hundreds of billions, spending all this money. And I mean, me too. I would love to, I would make ridiculously bad acquisitions if I were, the emperor of Apple. But one of the things that's great about Apple is that they're very disciplined about that. They make small acquisitions when they buy the technology or the people. When you buy a big, like when HP bought Compaq and then HP bought Palm, those were terrible acquisitions, hugely wasteful of money, resources. HP had 900 people working full time on just the acquisition strategy before they bought Compaq for 6-9 months, something like, I mean, just an insane waste of time and money. And they always say, well, this is going to give us synergies and all these wonderful benefits, and those rarely pan out. So I think
Time Warner AOL is another one that was just horrible.
Yeah. Horrible.
Well, I don't think Apple has shown any interest in doing any kind of major mergers with anyone at any point in time.
That shows discipline, I don't think.
I don't think they need to. Trying to integrate what Apple does to most of these companies would be almost impossible. It'd be, it's like trying to teach a caveman to drive a F1 racer. Right. I mean, it's like, because the thing is that these companies, what they measure and what they think is important and what they build their infrastructure around is so backwards most of the time. There's not really any reason for Apple to do that, and I don't mean that all Apple's approaches are well done, but I mean it's just a much more refined system, and I don't think there's any reason for them to pick those up. I think that one thing that I think is interesting is if I was Apple and I was going to spend money, I would just start buying back all the stock until it was all gone. I don't know why they even put up with these guys. The thing is that
they just take it private.
$45 billion a year, and in 10 years you own the company, and you don't have to. And then there's no more reports. There's a lot less of.
That would be a desirable.
If you want to get rid of cash,
except that you do want stock options, publicly traded stock options, to reward employees. Okay. I think that's the only reason that a company like Apple would want to be public. Why?
There's other ways they can reward them.
And the SEC requirements. Although we have this new jobs bill that apparently is changing that requirement a little bit, but not enough.
probably to get Apple out of the requirement to be public. It was 500. If you have 500 investors, you have to go public. And I think they've raised that number or about to raise that number to 1,000 or more. Look at Apple's stock price, though. The stock market likes it. Record high today of $615.48 is a little bit off that peak.
Just went up.
Yeah, it's going up. It's almost $8 up today.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah, one share of Apple stock costs more than a 32 gigabyte. that's the new metric. We now say, how long will it be until we can get a MacBook Air for the price of one share of Apple stock?
Not long, I think, at this rate.
But it does make you wonder. All these I've been reading financial reports over the past couple of weeks that keep saying, well, if they continue on this tech, they continue. There's it's almost impossible for Apple to bleed off as much money as more money than they're actually taking in.
Right.
And I haven't seen a good answer to the question. Well, what if this is a really good Apple is truly in a right place, right time, right product sort of situation, where right now they have some of the hottest selling products in the market, but they still have the iPad market completely to itself. What happens when a year from now, 2 years from now, other companies finally figure out how to make a $400 tablet that actually works extremely well? So,
well, that's why Apple is the new product is everything. So the new product is iCloud supporting Macs, MacBook Pros, MacBook Airs, iPads, phones, everything. And so even if Samsung came out with a superior tablet to the iPad, it wouldn't be part of your sort of ecosystem if you're, you know, like I am, which is, you know, you have Apple TV, you have everything. It still wouldn't be better.
But is iCloud such an intensively good value add? I know you're just making one example. That's not the whole argument. But is Apple ever going to be able to make anything again that is so uniquely the only thing you can get that will be as good as anything else and be coming out with? Once they come up with the tablet, what's next after that? Is the TV going to be that next thing? I've seen that the last week wasn't the first time that I think it was Jukase who was talking about a friend of his suggesting that maybe Apple's going to revolutionize cameras next. And I keep wondering where is the are they approaching the ceiling of innovation where there's a limit to how many revolutions they can accomplish in a 5 year period?
Cars. That's all I'm saying. Cars.
All right. I'm going to tell you what Apple should do. Because it's very simple. It's very obvious. First of all, there is some threat, you know, that they'll lose their hegemony in the iPad market. But Apple's very good at coming up with new products. They don't put very much of their money into R&D. In fact, they kind of put a notoriously small amount compared to other similar companies into R&D. Put a little more into R&D. If I were Apple, I'd want to control my supply chain a little bit better. They are, for instance, very dependent on Samsung for every single display right now on the iPad. LG's ramping up. Apple should start, I think, if from a business point of view, should really start maybe building their own supply chain because they don't control it, and that is a real risk, and it's why they couldn't make enough iPads in years past. So that's one. The other thing that I think Apple probably could spend its money on, let's see, I had two things. Oh, that I would like to see them spend their money on that they won't, is moving manufacture back to the U.S.
Yeah.
And that could tie into controlling the supply chain. We've already seen studies that say it would cost $60 more for an iPhone if you made it in the U.S. It's not a huge, significant increase. And I think it would be very good public relations for the company to just say, you know what, you're right. We used to make everything in the U.S. American workers are the best workers in the world. We want to make the best products in the world. We want to make quality. We are going to go upstream. Everybody else in the tech industry is making them in China, making them in Thailand, making them in Korea, making them in Brazil. We're going to move it all here to the U.S. That's what I'd spend the money on. It'd be very good for business, I think. Apple has this. Now, I was a little head up over this, but I'm going to give you guys a chance to defend Apple over this. A California district judge on Friday granted Apple an injunction against the Samsung Galaxy Nexus. This is the most recent Google Experience phone, which makes it significant, by the way. It is not, and I'm sure this is why Apple picked this as a target, it is not modified in any way by carriers. This is the Google Experience, or by manufacturers. It's also the first phone running Ice Cream Sandwich. The judge found that it likely infringes on all four patents cited by Cupertino. But the judge specifically singled out 604, which is called the Siri patent. There was slide to unlock, what Florian Mueller calls data tapping, and I still don't understand what it does, and basically autocorrect where it suggests responses. But Judge Koh said the one she was most convinced by is the patent that says when you do a search, go out, look at a lot of different sources, and put the results back into a single unified page for the user. That's the Siri patent. And, of course, I don't know exactly. I haven't looked at the complaint, but exactly where in the Nexus phone they're talking about. But I would guess it's the Google Voice search feature, which is very much like Siri, where you'll search for something, and I presume it brings back Yelp and location and other stuff. What do you think, Andy?
This is all pretty gross. When you look at the actual patents that are being actioned on, they're so broad that two of these things, I can tell you that I've actually written in code myself any time in the past 20 years because they're just that basic. The thing that you're confused about is something that I think on Apple it's actually called data detectors.
Data tapping thing.
Data tapping. It's essentially the idea that if someone sends you an email that says, oh, that's cool, I'll be in town. If you need to get in touch with me, here's my phone number. That's the ability to detect that sequence. Right. Yeah. That's to turn that into, you tap that and it turns into an actual voice call. Okay. But I mean, is that really so complicated that it is Apple's sole property? The patent for Siri. Now, when the first time that I was looking at these problems, I'm trying to activate it here. Here is like the Samsung Galaxy 3 version of Siri, and as you can see, it looks almost identical.
Yeah,
isn't that part of the problem?
No, that's not what the patent is. Not the
problem
the look.
Is the patent. The patent is, yeah, see, here it is. As I was talking, it said, "I'm sorry, I don't understand. What is the real deep? Do you like to search the web?" It is really exactly like Siri, but that's not the nature of their complaint. The nature of their complaint is that the transmogrification of the phrase "What's the weather like out there?" to a search of a weather page on the internet, and then a search of, God dang it,
Siri. Here, I can do it. Let me try.
No,
Chad, do you have an over the shoulder for me?
No. It's
what's the weather nature, like the nature, out there? I'm just the curious nature of the happen.
Unfortunately, I placed the phone down on the MacBook that I use like to control the chat, and so it's, ooh, I see a magnet. I bet the lid is closed. I'm going to try to go into sleep now. More Apple innovation. Why don't they try to legislate
I
that?
I see
out.
A magnet. So it did. So, I just so, did so, that so though. I said, "What's the weather out there?" And this is the Samsung version. This is not Google Voice. This is a Samsung version. Now, the Nexus does something similar with ice cream sandwich, and then it gave me the weather for a very nice presentation. Uh-oh, you've muted. Now, I don't know what magnet you've got there, but you've now muted yourself.
No, I've taken it off now.
Okay.
Am I good now? There you go. Sorry about that.
I hate it when that happens, you know. You got everything set up just right, and then...
I'm actually a few weeks away from like actually it's been like a couple of years since I set up the studio. I'm now a few weeks away from truly like moving everything out and rebuilding everything like so it makes sense now. And I think that just told me that I'm going to have to put like something over this keyboard to keep myself from doing that. But to get back to the point, their patent on that they're using for this is just the idea of saying what's the weather and turning that into a search result specifically for weather that returns search results. And that's another thing that anybody could tell you that they've written code like that in the past 20, 25 years. It's just absolutely silly. And it's just so broad that, believe it or not, I mean, Apple also tried to get injunction against this Galaxy 3, a Galaxy S3 from Samsung. And the reason why the judge turned that down wasn't because it was only because that Apple had made so many requests of that judge that she just didn't have time on her docket for it. So right now, this is a very popular phone that a lot of people are very, very happy with and are saying that, myself including, that this is pretty much as good as an iPhone. It's just different strengths and different weaknesses. This would not be on the market if not for the fact that there just wasn't time in order for Apple to block it. And it just gets me really disappointed because I was thinking about this morning that this is not the act of a greater nation. This is the act of a lesser nation. This is the act of a nation, of a society in decline. I'm not saying that this is a sign that Apple's going down. I'm not predicting Apple's going down. I'm simply saying that when you look at the things that make you think that a company has it all together, suing other companies into not making competing products based on what appear to be very flimsy excuses is not that thing.
Andy and I were on Trey Ratcliffe's Variety Hour, Trey's Variety Hour last night, talking about, among other things, iPad photography. And I think Andy thinks I'm nuts, but I love the camera in the new iPad so much. That's how I took that picture, by the way, of the Ford. That I've been using it for everything lately, and I'm just a huge fan.
I got to admit that I have two problems with it. I might have been turned around on it slightly this morning because I was out to breakfast. I was ordering waffles. And the idea of, like, taking pictures and seeing, like, an 8x10.
Yeah, baby.
Pretty cool. As a matter of fact, this kind of looked better even because it was...
makes me hungry.
At the actual waffles. But my problem is that, number one, there is no way to take pictures like this and not look like the biggest Dorkenstein. Secondly... The problems of, like, using – there are inherent problems always with using the iPad in bright sunlight. And so that means that when I was taking test pictures over the weekend, it was a nice, bright, sunny day, which meant that there's so much glare coming off of this huge piece of polished glass that I really couldn't see what I was aiming at. Also, the sun was washing out the screen, so I, again, really couldn't see what I was aiming at. And thirdly, when I'm taking it seems as though it's in many ways the worst of both worlds, where if I really want to go out and take good pictures, I'll have my real camera with me, and it takes incredibly good pictures. It's inconvenient because I have to, like, carry it around a strap, but it takes great pictures. If I'm just taking casual pictures, I use my iPhone, and that's great because I can just simply carry it in my pocket, take it up, take a picture, then put it back in my pocket. With the iPad, I've got not great picture taking, or at least not great compared to a real camera, and I've got all the inconvenience of this big bulky thing. Unless I want to walk around with this big, like, $500, $800 object that screams to people, "Hi, can you grab this and run faster than me? Have a free iPad."
Well, one thing I do is that, you see, my case is a Sunhood. Because I have a case with a lid. So in order to take the picture, if you fold the lid over, it covers the camera. So in order to take the picture, you have to do it this way. And as it turns out, it really does block the glare very nicely. In fact, Alan Tepper in the Pro Video Coalition magazine and website wrote an article saying this is the new 4x5 view camera. Because remember in the old days, the photographers, they've had to have a hood over their head?
If the Kickstarter project wanted to sell that, it clips on magnetically.
Yes.
Ready cosplay.
Yes.
But I think you're kind of proving my point. You're not looking.
I don't care. Look at this picture. This is so it's also the camera you have, right? So there was a bunny out by the truck the other day. Not my truck, of course. Mine would be a Ford F-150. But I said, that cute bunny. And I didn't have my Canon, 5D Mark II with a telephoto lens, which I would have liked. I only had my iPad. But I think I snapped a pretty great little shot there. That's filtered a little bit with Instagram. It's not what the original actually was. Was a little bit more natural color. The color is very good. The clarity is very good. It doesn't have. It's not wide angle or zoom, so you miss out on. It's like having a fixed prime lens. By the way, the bunny tasted fabulous. Just if people were asking, a little bit like chicken.
It takes pictures that are about as good as the iPhone 4, the 5 megapixel camera from. It's just that I'm gonna have like my iPhone 4 with me, so that's probably it's a much better camera, I think, for shooting video than anything else, because that's when you're shooting video, you are just standing, you're not taking out a video camera, snapping a second video and putting it back in. You really are just actually actively shooting. And when you take this video and you don't have to import it, you don't have to do anything to it, it's just there, and iMovie can start editing it immediately. That's pretty hot.
I agree. That's one of the reasons I like it, even for stills, is I've got iPhoto, which I'm starting to really like. Tough learning curve, but I'm starting to get it. And I can upload it immediately. Even, I got 3G, so even out in the field. And to me, photography has become much more of a social thing, thanks to Instagram and Facebook and Path. I don't take pictures just for the reel or the roll or for my album. I take them to post them, almost always. Very rarely do I take them not post them. Yeah. Those are only the butt pictures. I save those.
I could have gone my entire life.
I know. I'm sorry, Thank Rich. You. I apologize. I blame myself. Did you get AT&T or Verizon, Rich?
I actually got a Wi-Fi only iPad, but my iPhone is an AT&T iPhone.
And you use that as a hotspot then? Is that why you didn't feel the need?
No, it's just that for the way I operate nowadays, I find that whenever I'm out and about, if I have my iPad, I tend to be someplace where there's Wi-Fi.
Right. I went back and forth on that, and I ended up, because it's a company iPad, so I said, well, I'm going to buy it. But I think you probably could. Nowadays, everybody's around Wi-Fi almost all the time. You lose the GPS. Maybe that's not an issue.
Which I haven't missed. Plus, you know, I do have the iPhone. So
right.
If I'm someplace where there's no Wi-Fi, I'll fire up the iPhone and do what I need to do.
Right.
That said, I did have a couple of second thoughts about, did I make the right decision not getting the 4G on the iPad? And I'm thinking, probably for now. Eventually, you know, maybe my next iPad will be a 4G iPad. But I think so far, so good.
People who have Verizon LTE are reporting astounding speeds, like 50 megabits down, 15 megabits up. I don't know. I mean, it's almost overkill. It's not like you're downloading giant applications. Huh?
Yeah.
Is that, are you quoting that accurately, 50 or 15?
50 down. Both
50 down.
MG Siegler reported that in San Francisco, and somebody just mentioned it, that his friend in Portland is getting 50 down, 49 megabits down.
Okay. Oh, I see. Now, that's my Fios connection right there.
Exactly. Mm. But on the other hand, if you only buy 3 gigabytes a month, you're going to go through that lickety-split.
Well, but still, that'll only come into play if you're doing lots of streaming.
Right.
But if you're still a typical user, you're still going to be getting pictures, just the same transaction, only you'll get it faster. But this is the reason why
that's a good point.
When I buy my iPad 3, it is going to be an LTE model, because there's something about a tablet computer that to have an implicit connection to the internet really does change the device, even if you just have to wait exactly 10 seconds to log into a public Wi-Fi, that really does change the experience a little bit. Also, I'm so aware that there's so many times when I just can't find a Wi-Fi or a good public Wi-Fi. I have to say that, unfortunately, the Panera up the street has lost its license as a venue for my working out of the house, because not only is the Wi-Fi terrible, even the HSPA Plus on the AT&T mode without LTE is faster than its own Wi-Fi, and then they changed they increased the price of a soda by 15 cents. But now that I have a 4G iPad, though, now if I want to, I can work at the Chipotle. I can work at all these. I can work at the Dunkin' Donuts with the terrible Wi-Fi. It doesn't matter.
Oh, you don't mean get a job at the Chipotle? Things aren't that tough. You meant I can get work done.
It is a growing franchise. Yeah.
you know, it really depends on your use case. So Rich may only go to the same two places all the time, and they both have good Wi-Fi.
Bar and my study.
That's exactly. Right. You work at home, so you know. But if you spend time at airports, random airports across the country, or you know, you're on construction sites or whatever, you need access, I could see it. I mean, what's good is we're getting great performance.
Even the AT&T model, I was getting the highest I got was about 12 megabits. On average, it was about 7 or 8. That's what I reported in my review. But yeah, it's not a trivial upgrade.
No, amazing. How's the battery life when you're using LTE? People are reporting about 1 hour less, 9 hours.
It's commensurate with what you get on 3G. So if I'm using LTE exclusively, it was burning at about 30% to 40% faster than it would without LTE. Which is just a little bit higher than what I'm experiencing when I'm just doing nothing but 3G. All in all, I would say the battery life is about the same as what you get on the iPad 2. LTE does burn battery faster than 3G, but not so much that you would want to not use it.
And so that means that Wi-Fi iPads like Rich's are getting even more battery life than the previous year's model.
Not that you would actually feel it. I would say that most of the power is being sucked up by the screen and not by Unfortunately, I do have to say that I don't have like real benchmarks going here at the office when I test out battery life. It's more like I take a note of what the battery status was when I started working exclusively LTE, then take a note of what it was before I compare it to what I was getting a couple years ago. So I do think that the LTE was burning a little bit faster. I have also been trying it without any 3G, without any 4G, without any LTE. When I'm watching a movie, for instance, movie watching is almost exactly the same amount of battery life as previous. So I wouldn't, if you do get longer battery life working without LTE, I haven't seen that.
Interesting. Okay. They did really beef up the battery. It's not much heavier or thicker, but the battery is significantly.
Got it. I'm just holding this in front of me. Forget the Kevlar. This battery is going to stop pretty much anything.
Yeah. Let's talk about overheating, because that's the one thing I'm getting a lot of people asking me on Twitter and elsewhere. Well, how hot is your iPad 3? Is it overheating? Are you having problems? You reported this in your review. I've seen other reviews say 5 to 10 degrees hotter, right? What is it? It's a corner where the A5 chip is. Is that it? A5X chip is, right?
Right. If you're holding it like this, you'll feel a little bit of extra heat, like right here. I certainly wouldn't characterize it as overheating. Only that I've used the iPad 1, not used to after using it for a couple hours, part of the back of this being any warmer than any other part of it. I mean, apart from the heat from my hands. So this is the first iPad I've ever used where I can notice that. Gosh, the heat feels in this hand right here. Even when I have it in an easel, it feels a little bit warmer. But really, that's all it is. It feels a little bit warmer.
If you're just tuning in, Andy Iannatko is at the hands-on demonstration of the iPhone 5 and has one in his hands right now.
Yeah, and it is much, much thinner in hand than it looks in the in any video or photo you might get. It feels noticeably lighter than my iPhone 4S, and I've had that thing in my hand like for the past 2 hours tweeting, so I know how heavy the iPhone 4S sometimes feels. Very, very slick piece of kit. Right now I'm focusing on the Sears Tower in Chicago, trying to find the address of the Chicago Sun-Times so we can get that for future coverage. But yeah, it's really just a remarkable piece. And also my ears are still in joy mode after having heard three numbers from the Foo Fighters, one of my favorite bands in the world. Probably made quite the fool out of myself with the cheering at the very, very end. But then again, after Tim is not on the stage, you're no longer a journalist. You can actually be a proper fanboy.
All that pent-up cheering just poured out of you.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, it was... I actually was tweeting out how, okay, we've seen nothing that we didn't plan to see before. And then, of course, they dropped all the other stuff about iOS. So this idea of not wanting to crowd out the iPhone with other announcements turned out not to be the smart money because they decided to, of course, update every single thing that they had going in the iPod line. So it makes you think about what might be happening next month if those rumors also come to pass. Also, upon exit, everybody got a new set of earbuds and a card for the iTunes store.
Wow. Have you tried the earbuds yet?
I have not tried the earbuds yet because I was scrambling to be one of the first people to get my mitts on one. I've already had about 5 minutes with it and then voluntarily gave it up to someone next to me because I don't want to be a total iPhone hog. But I have not taken them out of the box yet. The interesting thing is that the demo of it on stage basically made it sound as though that earbuds can be the most complicated things that an engineer can work on. It is a three-port design that is designed to channel sound through the stem of the earbuds through three individually tuned ports. So clearly the next thing I'm going to have to try out is exactly how, well, maybe I'll just put some Foo Fighters up and see how that plays out.
Well, it's interesting because they're only $29. So if they are, in fact, you know, that significantly improved, that's going to be an amazing deal.
Absolutely. And it's certainly in the price range of most premium. To see that Apple has been paying attention to pretty much every element of it. I think one of the money quotes from the end from Tim Cook was really the Apple mission statement, which is that great products actually enhance people's lives on a day-to-day basis, and that's probably why they like to do the things that they do. And so anytime you're trying to figure out what they're going to be working on, the iPhone 5, apart from the larger screen, doesn't feel like an absolutely revolutionary upgrade, but you notice that they focus on making the screen better and pleasanter to read. It is the contrast seems sharper. Details seem to pop a little bit. I had it side by side next to my iPhone 4S for a bit, and yeah, it's noticeably better. This new laminated screen is just wonderfully aces. And then the other thing, which is, well, if we're going to give away free headphones with these things, we may as well make them great headphones rather than just sending them out to the lowest bidder somewhere. So, but again, you understand. I've said in the past about how it's not always relevant for. It's not always important for Apple to make things thinner like the Retina MacBook, but you can see why they want to make a phone thinner because, again, it kind of disappears in the hand. And that's good. I'm going to pass this on to somebody else who can get another chance at it, but really, really remarkable experience holding on to it.
Is the LTE turned on? Are you able to try the LTE, or is that something that...
I haven't tried the LTE. Everything's on Wi-Fi, and it's probably a very, very... Probably a very, very cluttered environment. The first time that I tried to, of course, get my self-indulgent screenshots of the phone with the Sun-Times site on it and my personal site on it, it took a little while for the first burst of people trying to get their own personal websites up on the phone, their own personal newspapers up on the phone. It took a while. But after that, it was very, very, very zippy. I also want to talk about how really wonderful the 3D Maps feature is. I think we've used some of these features in the past where you think, well, that's kind of cute if you've got that much time to just, again, see if you can see through the windows of your apartment building on that, and then you never use it again. This is so liquid and so fluid that I could really see myself using it as a way to think, oh, damn it, I know that Nanking Palace is supposed to be somewhere on this street. Where the hell is it? And then actually... doing about a mile worth of legwork on the phone rather than having to do it on actual foot. I mean, it is completely interactive, completely fluid, works brilliantly. There are some new kind of gestures to learn to get to street level if you want a more lower camera angle on what you're looking at, but you get the hang of it pretty darn quickly. Also, coverage is not absolutely in-depth at this point. I wanted to, for instance, the demo phones are set up with bookmarks for popular landmarks. So I was in Chicago and, of course, was able to get to the Sears Tower, but could not find the Sun-Times building, which probably had to navigate directly. So if you want that really cool, I'm riding a 20th floor helicopter around the building. Those are going to be for specific landmarks that have definitely already been cataloged. For other things like the famous giant chrome bean in Millennium Park, you can definitely see it. You can definitely helicopter around it, but you're not going to be able to, you know, land the helicopter and get a ground floor peep at it. So clearly, even as a first day demo, it was a great demo. I look forward to seeing how good this is going to be in about a year. How it goes going to be in about a year when they've got more of this populated.
Did you get a chance to play with the camera at all? Can you tell if it's improved?
I have not been able to. I'm within 10 feet of Foo Fighters. I am with 10 feet of Foo Fighters.
We'll let you go kiss Dave Grohl if you want. It's okay.
And 10 feet of, yeah, exactly. I'm basically making sure that I'm not going to get in people's way. There is a... Oops, sorry, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah.
There is, dude, use your iPhone, man.
Oh. You see the panoramic?
Sorry. They're lining up for a very lovely photo.
I think Andy Anako, who is at the hands-on right now at the Apple event, is...
having more fun than we are.
Yeah, he's a Foo Fighter fan. I did not know.
My favorite bands. I once canceled plans because they're playing live on Letterman, let alone anything else. Sorry.
He's actually touching Dave Grohl's hem right now.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Love all your stuff. I just interacted with a Foo Fighter. Two Foo Fighters.
Well, I'm glad it was worth flying Andy out just for that. Andy, we'll let you go. I know you're going to want to spend more time with the Foo Fighters and the phone.
No, I'm looking forward. Well, the thing is, it's probably good that I'm talking to you because otherwise I'd be sort of saying, well, why don't I just say hello and see if we can get lunch together. But I'm being distracted by something else rather than geeking out. Say hello to Tom Gruber, by the way.
Hey, how you doing?
By the way. It's if you're looking to fill out your tech pundit bingo card, you would have filled it up in about the first 6 minutes.
I don't think he is. Andy, have fun. We'll let you go.
Apple announced all the things today.
Everything.
Everything.
You know, I think most of us are saying, oh, this will be the little add-on announcement to the September announcements. This was bigger, much bigger, even though it was in a smaller venue, than last month's announcements. Huge.
One thing after another. Relentless.
So let me run through kind of in order the things Tim Cook and Phil Schiller talked about. By the way, no Scott Forstall on stage. And there there may be something to read in that, if that's the if that's the balcony on the Kremlin overlooking the May Day parade. One of the generals was missing. But before we get to that, let's talk about what Apple did announce. They started off, as we expected, with a new version of iBooks 3, adding a landscape mode and a few other features. We thought, the rumor was, this was going to be a big focused on education announcement. In fact, it was not. That was, you know, they did update iBooks Author 2.0 is coming out today. iBooks 3 coming out today. But really, that was it when it comes to education. These announcements spoke to the mainstream of Apple's product line in a big way, including three new Macs. Now, we did expect a MacBook Pro 13-inch Retina display. We got it. Very thin, 3/4 inch thin, 3.57 pounds light. It's a 2560 by 1600 4-megapixel Retina display. Tim Cook said the second highest density display we make. It's going to come
in the industry.
In the industry. That's right, because nobody else is doing this. It's going to be shipped with a solid state drive, 8 gigs of RAM, 2.5 gigahertz i5 processor for $1,699. So it is much cheaper, about $600 cheaper than the 15-inch MacBook Pro with Retina display, but still at a premium price for the Retina. I'll tell you what, let me get through all of these and then we can go one by one along. There was a new Mac Mini announced, very kind of high-powered Mac Mini with i5 and i7 processors, Intel's Ivy Bridge, Thunderbolt, and FireWire. They still make Macs with FireWire 800 on them. I think that's more a tip of the hat to how people use the Mac Mini than anything else. Not a discrete graphics GPU. It's not intended to run big monitors. It's really intended for server closets and perhaps home theater PCs. They did announce a new iMac, and here's where the surprise happened, because I don't think anybody reported much of a redesign on the iMac, and in fact, it was redesigned. Still has a big chin, but boy, it's very thin in profile, 5 millimeters on the edge, bit of a bulge in the middle, but the appearance is of a gorgeous, thin display using something called, I don't know what it is, but I'm sure I'll find out today, friction stir welding. 2560 by 1440. They say each display is individually calibrated. That's kind of a little bit of a tip of the hat to the photographers and other pro users who want really accurate color on their display. 40% less volume in this new iMac. 8 pounds lighter than the previous iMac. It will ship with a solid-state drive or a hard drive, spinning hard drive. In fact, the base models are spinning hard drives. There is a BTO option with what Apple's calling its Fusion drive, which combines flash with a 1 or 3 terabyte spinning drive. The 21-inch version of that iMac won't be available till November. It will be $1,299, the same price, I think, as the existing iMac. The 27-inch, $1,699 in December. Then they kind of surprised people. they replaced the current iPad. The third-generation iPad, it's the old one. There is now a fourth-generation iPad. Not a significant change. Same price. Biggest change is faster processor, an A6X processor, which Tim Cook said is twice as fast. Remember that the iPhone 5 has the A6 and is significantly faster than the third-generation iPad. So forget your third-generation iPad. It's now the fourth-generation iPad. That was a bit of a surprise as well. Of course, Lightning connector, as you would expect from all new Apple mobile devices. The iPad Mini, that's the name. It's the Mini. I didn't think it would be called the Mini.
Lowercase M.
Lowercase M, just like the Mac Mini. So it fits in that line, I guess. 0.68 pounds, Tim said, light as a pad of paper. It is not a 7.85 inch screen. It's 7.9. So there. 1024 by 768. The rumor was that it would be $329 for an 8 gig version. Close. 16 gigs, $329. 32 gigs, $399. 64 gigs, $499. You can pre-order Friday. You can pre-order Friday, but the Wi-Fi won't ship till November 2nd.
the LTE till November 16th. Apple's stock price took a little bit of a hit down to $6.24 as a result of the news. That's to be expected. So there's the rundown. No special musical guest. It was held in a small, formerly a movie theater, kind of a golden age movie theater in downtown San Jose. Small enough that I think Apple decided they better stream this event for the journalists who weren't able to go or get in. And so we were able to watch the live stream. We did make a Twitch special. It's episode Twitch special number 141. If you want to watch Tom Merritt, Sarah Lane, Ayaz Akhtar, and me comment as Tim Cook's on the stage. Phil Schiller did most of the demos. Nobody, no third-party vendors, no Electronic Arts showing Infinity Blade Dungeons 4 or anything like that. So it was a fairly quick announcement, considering the amount of material they had to go through. They did also talk a little bit about the great success of the iPad. They say there are now 100 million iPads in use worldwide, over 2.5 years of sales. How many? They said 750,000 apps, 35 billion app downloads. Lots of big, big numbers. Let me start with you, Renee Ritchie, because, of course, iMore was the source for most of the rumors about the Mini. Were there surprises here for you, even for you?
I think the only big surprise for me is when we initially heard about the iPad Mini back in May, we heard there'd be an 8-gigabyte model at around $200 to $250 with the express purposes of taking it to the sort of Nexus 7, Amazon Kindle 7 space. And it looks like Apple didn't go ahead with that SKU. They went right to the 16-gigabyte model. So that was the only thing that surprised me. But I think the form factor, the screen, everything like that was pretty much what we heard.
Wasn't everybody saying a 7.85 inches? I mean,
they might be rounding
matters
up. We'll have to measure it.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't matter that much, half an inch. How about the iMac? Did anybody expect that?
Yes.
I think. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Renee.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say that the Chinese message boards are becoming a wealth of information about upcoming Apple products.
Because they have to make them. And so
absolutely,
they're seeing them. Yeah.
And they posted about some of the internals for this device. And we heard independently that they're going to be using the laminated display from the Retina MacBook.
Right.
So you put that together with the other stuff and it sounded like a thinner iMac. And that's pretty much what we got.
So there was also a big storm, or still is going on back east, although it's, I guess, tapering off now. Yes. And a lot of things went down. You were starting the list, Renee Ritchie. Gizmodo, or actually all of Gawker was down, right?
HuffPo was down for a short amount of time. Squarespace, you just said before, rebooted. It's
interesting. They kept their servers on overnight, but then they decided, I guess, for maintenance reasons, to reboot everything.
And it canceled the Google event that was scheduled for Monday.
Yeah.
It was... New York was, I think they had pictures of taxi cabs kind of floating down the streets.
A lot of pictures of things that didn't happen. There was no, apparently the shark pictures that Twitter was inundated with. There were no.
I remember that from Irene last year, yeah.
Yeah, people love that stuff. Alexis Madrigal on The Atlantic did a really good job of debunking a lot of the Twitter pictures. And then there's also a Twitter feed. Or a Tumblr, I should say, feed called Twitter. I think it's Twitter is Wrong. That just and this is probably one to keep around. Is Twitter wrong.tumblr.com? It's a good Tumblr to keep around because Twitter apparently posts. There's a lot of posts on Twitter that really, for instance, lots of pictures of thunderstorm cells, a certain kind of thunderstorm. Cell thunderstorm or something. Supercell.
Citation needed.
Yeah. And these pictures are real, but they're actually something much less destructive than Sandy. The problem with the hurricane is it's kind of just boring. It's just kind of clouds and wind. These are all...
If you're lucky, it's really boring.
Just
be careful.
This is posted on Twitter as an amazing photo of Sandy meeting the Statue of Liberty. Of course not. It's a supercell thunderstorm. That's a nice job taking a picture from the day after tomorrow and adding the NY1 live cam lower third onto it. So this is good. But now this is real. And some of this stuff is devastating. This is one of the shark pictures. And they still, Alexis Madrigal has published this at the Atlantic Monthly and they're trying to track it down. I suppose there's no reason why you couldn't have fish
But I think sharks and other fish would probably try to stay out of that. That one's obviously fake. You're not going to see
that first one looked really good.
The first one is a good fake if it's a fake.
It could be done. You could fake it that
sure.
way.
Sure. And that one, this is actually the first thing you find if you search for shark fin in Google image search. And then
if there was a Mac Pro sighted in the storm, that would be unbelievable.
Yeah. I'd love that, huh? There's another shark.
All I can say is well done.
Yeah, swimming along on the West Side Highway there.
I commend you for the creativity.
Oh, we've now apparently, sir, this has been a fake. This is a fake.
I think you can see the transition. So right past the house, you can see how the color transitions and the size of the ripples. I think that was probably where they made the transition.
You could make a good living, Alex Lindsay, as a Photoshop fake detector. I mean, really?
That'd be like Mythbusters, except for photos.
We should. Okay, now we're going to do two new segments. We're going to do fact-checking on commercials
and
then Photoshop fakes. I think we could. This is a good one. This is a good fake. Sharks in the mall. Oh, no, that's Toronto's Union Station. Okay, these are all fakes.
One of those famous Toronto sharks.
This one's real, and that's a little scary. Mm. There's one of the water flooding the PATH station in New Jersey that's real. Some pretty dramatic stuff. Anyway, you can't believe everything you read. However, Andy, you're on the spot, and obviously it was nothing. Had you experienced to sneeze at, you'd not experienced anything like that, I'm sure. Irene was like this.
It really depends on where you are. I've been through a couple New England storms that were a lot worse than this. Most of them were snow events. It really depends on, of course, where you are.
Yeah.
I just heard this morning at breakfast, went to breakfast out. I just decided to drive a while away to be with friends and have some hot food. A restaurant that proudly had this little like lot rebuilt after a 1994 storm that proudly had mounted like about chest high around the restaurant. This is where the floodwaters were when we were destroyed in 1994, and that restaurant got destroyed in this storm too. So.
Wow.
That's why I always one of the other photos that tends to get forwarded around as a meme is when a picture. Oh my God! Look at all the hurricane disaster, and there's a picture of one patio chair that's on its back on the porch. Said, not everybody got off quite so lucky. There are some people who are now completely wiped out with their businesses and homes. But hey, funny photo.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to make light of it in any event, and certainly I have family members there and. We wish everybody well. And what's interesting is how much it did affect the internet, how much stuff comes out of New York City and how the power being out. Our good friend Dick T. Bartolo, of course, lives on the Upper West Side in New York City. His boat is just a few blocks away at the boat basin there. He says the worst storm I've ever seen in New York City, the highest tides ever. And some of us were watching his drop cam of the boat, and eventually went dead because power went out there. But he says his work boat did make it through the storm. Of course, Dick himself survived. And there's a great bunch of posts at gizwiz.biz on his blog that you might want to take a look at.
It's amazing how many people stayed on the internet even without power and even with the rain coming in. And there was a tweet from the New York, I think it was the New York Fire Department, saying, please don't tweet us disaster reports. Please call 911.
In fact, I even saw an article, how to continue to use Twitter when the power goes out. It's like this has become our bread and butter, right?
Also, it does change. The technology has changed the way that we respond to these disasters. I remember the Blizzard of 78, which for anybody above the age of 35 who grew up in New England is one of the hallmark memories of childhood, where the main like two lane four lane highway that connects all of eastern Massachusetts was covered in snow for 2 days. My dad actually brought in a state trooper whose car broke down, and we had him over for lunch one of the days we were snowed in. It was just a huge sense of community, and everybody on their sleds on Route 1, trying to get from town to town to check on relatives. Now, like I said, I've got surrounding me right now, I've got about 24 hours worth of battery backed access to the internet. And so I can still email people. I can still tweet people. I can still text to find out if people are okay. If I needed to, I could even have done this show. from my house without any power. I've got an HD camera on the iPad. I've got LTE. That would work just fine. And so maybe, unfortunately, maybe that's turned us from people who react to these natural disasters by tightening our bonds to our community to people who tend to do that by hunkering down a little bit tighter inside our houses.
Yeah, I agree. We're going to take a break because I know the big story, the lead, and I'm burying the lead. We mentioned it at the top, is Scott Forstall out at Apple. And in the process of this, a lot of reporting being done by Nick Bilton at the New York Times, Om Malik at GigaOm, John Gruber, Fortune, about what it's like inside Apple right now. And some interesting revelations. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Marco Arment has a hysterical article about his experience at a Microsoft store looking at the Windows RT launch. And he really does make the point. He says the store is creepy. So many elements are embarrassingly similar to the Apple store on the next floor. Microsoft even ripped off trivial elements that could easily have been different. Things like the blue T-shirts that employees wear. There's a huge elephant in the room. We can all see it, but Microsoft still implicitly denies it. Look at the wood floors. They have, instead of a genius bar, they have, well, I can't remember what they call it, but it's a genius bar.
It's kind of like they couldn't think of anything better.
A wizard bar or something. It's a fun article to read. It's a little overly anti-negative.
It was heavy-handed, but why can't you do something different?
Yeah.
Well, they can't do anything better at this point. I think they'd rather be hit for being a copy than being a failure. So they're doing the market leader exactly at this point.
I disagree with that. I think they do several things as well as Apple does them. And I think Apple doesn't do themselves any favors when they overpromise and overpraise their own products, Microsoft doesn't do them any favors when they copy the Apple store so closely, and secondly when they leave off like that final little just like a good contractor, the final walkthrough of the house before he turns over the keys, just looking for little nail heads that are sticking up, looking for spots of paint that got missed. It's that extra 1% that often turns around an experience. Microsoft can take a product to 99%, but they really aren't good at making that final step.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a fun article. It's shall we say it's slightly partisan.
Well, this is the new trend, by the way. We often get slammed for not being partisan enough. That you notice your reluctance, Andy, to even talk about Surface on a Mac Break Weekly.
Only because I know my own failings, that when I'm enthusiastic about something, I tend to blabble about it long and long and long. And also I'm deep in writing my next 1,000 words about it mode. So essentially all 3,000 words and 43 minutes of talking about it would come out into this microphone. I think it's a very, very solid product. I don't think that it deserves most of the slams that it's getting. I essentially think that the pull quote from the part one was really that between the iPad and Surface RT, it really is a yin and yang sort of thing. I don't think that one is conceptually better than the other, because there are things that the iPad is just not really very good at that the Surface is exceptional at. And then there are things like, again, anything that involves sitting comfortably in a sofa and holding the device in that sort of a familiar puppy dog sort of way. The Surface RT is like a cat. It does not want to be held. it'll bite back.
Yeah. It's pretty clear that each company, and I'll even include Amazon in this, has something to add to the conversation. The conversation might have been started by Apple, and Apple gets credit for that, although Microsoft's been pushing tablets since 2000. Couldn't make a good one until Apple said, no, try this. And then they said, oh! but everybody's adding something to the conversation, and for customers, that is really good.
Yeah. I'm really practically giddy about all the choice about this.
Exactly.
Android 10-inch tablets are absolutely boring because there is nothing that it's trying to do except for be something like the iPad, only not as good as the iPad and just as expensive as the iPad. It's wonderful when you see Amazon come out and say, well, what if we developed a tablet that was more designed towards reading and content consumption, where we're willing to make it not as good at everything else if we make it just the best thing possible for content consumption? And so you have that option. And then you have Surface RT, which is, well, what if you have people who like a tablet, but they still really, really want something that's more notebooky, that really is better at being handled with a keyboard and a mouse than the iPad is? Now people have that option. That's why it sort of disappoints and frustrates me when people try to make this out into a field of winners and losers,
right,
that something is not as good as the iPad, and therefore it's a failure. Fail.
I think we're moving past.
We have all the...
Go ahead, Renee.
All the shades of gray now. You can go from an iPod Touch to an iPad Mini to an iPad to a Surface to a MacBook Air or Ultrabook, and you really can pick exactly as much device as you need for the situation that you're in.
The question, of course, is when we get into a decision paralysis. You know what I mean? At some point, within the companies and also with all the other pieces of trying to figure out, you know, which one you need. I know that for me, the hard part is you walk into a phone store and you know, if you weren't buying an iPhone from a Verizon store, there are so many phones. I don't even know how I could make that choice. I mean,
yeah.
I have a Galaxy and I have an iPhone and then, you know, and a Nexus, but I'm not all the other ones.
There's a class of consumers that just wants to be told, that's the one, get that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But that's not anybody who watches any of our shows. I mean, I don't think.
Which is exactly what Tim Cook said about the Surface when he was on Apple's conference call last Thursday, that they didn't make any tough choices, that releasing products is about tough choices. And he found the Surface message confusing, and that Microsoft didn't decide we're going to make an RT version. They're doing the RT version and the Pro version. They're doing Metro and the desktop. They're doing the touch keyboard and the clickety clack keyboard, which I think is a good example of the different cultures that still exist in both companies.
Yeah, and that you could say the same thing for Android. Choice over is preferred over a monolithic lead the way strategy, and that's what Apple's famous for. And Apple does a good job of that. And if you like the Apple way, then you're going to be very happy because you'll Johnny Ive will lead you to to the promised land or white heaven.
Well, I think we'll end up with I think we're definitely moving quickly to where no one's a winner and a loser, but really everyone's got 20 or 30% of the market.
But there's also some overlap. For instance, Google just released today a new Google search for iOS that has Siri-like capabilities. And so Google, now it's an interesting thing that Google, because Google has a foothold in iOS, rapidly diminishing foothold in iOS, but it can start doing things like, you can say, what's the weather like in San Francisco in the Google search app on iPhone? And it will give you a Siri-like response. What's the tallest building in San Francisco? I mean, this is kind of interesting.
And it'll be interesting that one that we have to do is to download it and do the same question with the exact same words and see what we get with each one, because I think it's going to be very interesting to see.
Herb Stemple versus that other guy. Just put them both in isolation booths.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Again, another one I want to do. I want to
someday.
We got to do this fact-checking stuff.
England had three kings that rode horses and had the letter H in their names. Name any two of those kings, the names of their horses, and the years of their reigns.
That'd be very interesting, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Let's take a break, come back. Lots more to talk about. Andy Iannotko is here from the Chicago Sun-Times at an undisclosed location looking somewhat like Johnny Ive Heaven.
We think this is the best podcast we've ever done.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this trip down memory lane with Mac Break Weekly. And what a great bunch of people. Alex Lindsay, just adore him. Andy Iannotko, I mean, don't you wish he was like your neighbor, your friendly neighbor that'd come over every once in a while and sit on the porch with you and jaw? I mean, just talk about his life and, you know, his insight. I mean, just so much fun. That's why actually I like doing Mac Break Weekly, is because I get to sit down with those guys. And our newest host, Renee Ritchie from iMore, just love him too. And of course, all the guests that stop by from time to time to make the show better, like Jason Snell and Chris Breen, Mac OS Ken Ray, so many great people on the show. We've got a great year planned for you in 2013. I thank our producers of Mac Break Weekly for the first 7 months. It was Eileen Rivera. She's moved on. She's working at Google now, YouTube in L.A. And to our new addition and a superstar as far as I'm concerned, Chad Johnson, who does such a great job putting the show together every week. He puts together all of the big shows on Twitter, and he's just a star producer. You got to watch his show, OMG Craft. What are you going to do for the holidays for OMG Craft? Are you going to build a Yule log?
Yep.
Yeah, a Minecraft Yule log in the fireplace. That'd be good. OMG Craft is Tuesdays, right?
Thursdays.
7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. And it's live, but you can also watch it on Chad's site, omgcraft.com, on the web. Well, this has been a fun Christmas day. Thank you for spending some time with me. I hope you're enjoying our show. We love hearing from you. If you want to hear something in particular on Mac Break Weekly, just let us know. You can tweet us or visit us in the chat room. Really is part of the reason I love doing these shows, is I get to see the chat room. They're so great. You can join us in the chat room, but just go to twit.tv. There's a link there. If I were you, I would download a copy of a Mac chat client. I personally like Textual, which is on the App Store, but a lot of people like XChat, Aqua. There's a number of good choices. Set it up for our IRC. It's irc.twit.tv. And just you know what I do? I have a checkbox that says just open the Twit chat when you open the program. So I have it running all the time. It's so much fun. So thank you all you in the chat room, all of you who have listened and watched. And I hope you have a wonderful holiday and a great new year. And we'll see you back here in 1 week in 2013. Happy holidays, everybody. Now get back to work or your eggnog. Break time is over.